Ah, that's right. We're right back here, Sharp Facets Gallery, this afternoon. Guys, kind of cloudy out there. It seems like we were supposed to get some rain here, but so far it's just a little bit of rain and a lot of promise of some rain. But this afternoon I have a very special guest with me, a guest that's actually probably one of my oldest guests for being on the show. That's right. Yes. I have Dr. Beth Bethel. She was a professor at Lander. She was the founder and first executive director of Community Initiatives. She's retired for the second or third time. I'm not really sure, but she's having a blast. She's writing a blog. It's called In the Short Grass. How you doing today, Dr. Beth Bethel?
Hey, Ann. How are you?
I'm great.
Good to be here.
It is good to have you here. You know, I guess the last time we really, our paths crossed was out there at Stony Point during the Symetra tour.
We were. You were working and I was playing.
You were playing. Well, I think you were watching people play and introducing them to the whole, weren't you?
I was, yes, I was the marshal. It was a great job. I loved it. I got to tell people to stop, start, right. Move, don't move.
Oh, so you got to be in charge.
I was in charge of one hole.
One hole. Well, you know, Beth, I know you have worked very, very hard. You've written, how many books have you written?
Three.
Three books.
Mm-hmm.
And about Promised Land. We've talked about those
right.
before. And, of course, after I guess you decided to retire, would that be right?
That would be retire.
Yes. You didn't have anything to do.
I was completely at loose ends.
And, you know, when you've worked all your life,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
You're the type of person that you got to stay busy, right?
Sure.
So how did you come up with writing a blog?
It was an accident.
An accident?
It was an accident. Before I retired.
Yes.
As I was transitioning into my third retirement, I had started playing golf again. And I remembered how much I loved golf.
You played golf when originally? You played it?
I've played golf off and on all my life. I played golf in high school. I played golf when I was a young adult. I was playing golf when I came to Greenwood in 1973.
Right.
And then I stopped playing golf because one can't be a researcher and an academically productive person and still play a lot of golf. And one can't be a decent golfer if one only shows up every now and then at the golf course. So,
and being a perfectionist as you are.
Well, and then I was.
Right,
I don't
okay.
know that I am now.
Okay. All right. But anyways, so you gave it up in 1973-ish?
Well, maybe 75-ish or 76-ish.
Okay.
And then I was getting ready to go visit my older son maybe 10 years ago. He lives in California. And I had golfed with my children,
mm-hmm.
you know, when I was a young mom. And, of course, when I stopped, they stopped, and life went on, and they became grown-ups and did their own thing. And in any case, when we were chit-chatting on the phone and getting ready to go visit, and he said, hope you're jonesing to play some golf, Mom. And I said, oh, I haven't played golf in 30 years. And he said, well, we've started playing golf. We're taking golf lessons. We're having a lot of fun playing golf.
Right.
We're going to play some golf. And I said, okay, because, you know, I love my kids. And I loved playing golf with him when he was a little kid.
Right.
And I
like it. It was a bonding experience here.
It's very intimate to play golf with somebody. You know them well before the round's over.
Probably. All right, Beth. Well, let's talk some more. So you went out there to California.
After 30 years, I hadn't touched a golf club, and we played four rounds of golf in 4 days. Then it doesn't mean anything to anybody who's not a golfer. But before it was over, I was trembling with exhaustion every day, taking hands full of ibuprofen. I mean, it's like...
It was insane.
Yes. Yeah. Uh-huh. But I remembered how much I loved it. And so Wes said, are you going to keep playing golf when you go back? And I said, yeah, I am. And he said, well, all right, I'm going to buy you some clubs so that I know you're going to play golf when you go back. And I let him buy my driver, but he stood over me while I ordered some irons, and they were waiting for me when I got home. Mm-hmm. And I had to, it was very humiliating, Ann, because I'd been a fair golfer when I quit.
Right.
And I wasn't a fair golfer anymore.
You forgot some of those little tips that make a difference.
My form was gone. I had no form. Plus, you know, many years had been added to my body.
Right.
And it would no longer do what it used to do.
Yeah, we all suffer from that,
yeah.
Beth. Yes,
yeah. And so but I reclaimed my game, such as it is. I'm a really mediocre golfer.
Did you start taking lessons?
I did. I took lessons, and I went back to the same golf course where I had played when I first moved to Greenwood. Mm-hmm. And continued. And so I'd been playing golf as I approached retirement, and I was thinking, well, you know, that's what people do when they retire is they play golf, and so I'll play golf.
And what better area to live in with all the golf courses and all the things we have right here in Carolina?
And, you know, if you're willing to endure just a little bit of discomfort, just a teeny bit of discomfort, you can play golf year-round in South Carolina. It's a little hot now, and it's a little cold in January, but for the most part, you can play golf anytime you want.
So would you say that you're addicted to golf again?
Yeah, I would.
Yeah. You would. How many days a week do you play, Beth?
I play three, sometimes four.
Okay. All right. So you've gotten back into golf at this point, but and now you're retired, so you don't have anything you're really doing except focusing on golf.
But I knew I was going to write about it. I was going to write about golf.
And you probably thought you'd write a book.
I did, because I'd only ever written a book, and I didn't know that you'd write anything but a book. If you've only written books, then you think you're going to write another book. And
sure.
And that was my plan. But I hadn't written anything at all for 10 years except grant applications and reports to funders for community initiatives. So that part of me...
Boring. A little bit boring.
It was a little bit boring.
Yeah.
And toward the end, it was a whole lot boring. But it, you know, it's a different kind of writing. It's technical writing, and you're writing a formula.
Sure.
So there's nothing really... creative.
Right.
There's nothing of you in it. There's no, I mean, the whole point is to filter out the emotion. And I had lots of feelings about why golf is a wonderful sport, and I wanted to share those. Mm-hmm. All right, so I knew I was going to write about golf, but I didn't know how to start. And
I think one of the things that you were telling me off the air is that when you write a book, you are totally possessed by the writing of the book, right?
You are.
Kind of like being pregnant?
It is like being pregnant. And the further along in it you get, the more pregnant you become.
Right.
And those of us who've been pregnant know that as you move into the 7th, 8th, and 9th months of your pregnancy, it's dominating. And books are like that, too.
Sure. Then, of course, you send it off and somebody looks at it and goes, what? Well, I think you could use a rewrite here and a rewrite there.
Months go by and sometimes years go by before what you delivered to the editor in the form of a manuscript, a precious manuscript.
One with your blood, sweat, and tears in it. Yes.
Comes back to you first as an edited copy and then as a book with a cover on it and a picture and all the spelling corrected and all the grammar corrected and is no longer your product. It's everybody's product. It belongs to the copy editor, the publisher, the this, the that, you know, the art person. It's no longer just you.
Right.
It's
so you come a little bit disconnected, even though when you sit there and read some of the passages, you can say, oh, yeah, I wrote that, right?
Yeah, but it's not yours anymore. I mean, I've never felt like when I look at my books, the physical book.
Right.
I think they're very interesting, but I don't have an emotional
connection.
I have an intellectual connection, but I don't have an emotional connection with them anymore. What I connect with emotionally is the manuscript. And I still have my
original manuscripts.
Yeah, I do for all my stuff. Actually, I'm willing those to my son Charlie because he's a writer too. And so he'll have to figure out what to do with those pieces, piles of paper, thousands of pages.
Yeah, wow. All right, well, we are here with Dr. Beth Bethel. When we come back, we're going to find out how she got into blogging, how it has progressed, all the things she's doing with it. I tell you what, she's fascinating, and she really has a lot to tell us about golf, and you may want to start reading her blog. So why don't you stay right here with us, right here on WCRS. We'll be back in just a moment. Don't you go away.
Gold. Gold. More precious than any other time in history. Do you have gold? Do you need cash? Then bring it to SFG. That's Sharp Facets Gallery, 1220 Bypass 72, Greenwood. Telephone 229-6613. Don't forget, we buy diamonds too. Paying the highest prices for your gold and diamonds at Sharp Facets Gallery.
They say that golf, there are three contests that go on in every golf match. It's you against you, how you played last time, you against the course, and you against your competitor. So there are three tournaments. Yeah.
Oh, that's right. We're right back here. I'm here with Dr. Beth Bethel. She's written three books. And we talked actually extensively the first couple of times you came on about your books down there in Promised Land.
Yes.
And a lot of the things that you had done. Very transformational type work you did then.
Thank you.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, and I know a lot of people that started out kind of surprised that you were there, really, really in the end were amazed at the connections and everything you were able to make.
Well, you know, I eulogized one of my collaborators this summer.
Did you?
Yes.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. This spring.
This spring, yeah.
So I still have a connection.
To Promised
Land. To Promised Land, yes. It was transformative for me.
Yeah. So, I don't know, can you still read those books? Are they still available?
Or? Yeah, get them. Yeah.
Amazon.com. Amazon.com. And what are the names?
Promised Land.
Promised Land. Well, who knew? Promised Land. Okay.
AIDS. Readings on a Global Crisis. It was written in the 90s, you know, before the World Health Organization got their act together and before we became more globally responsible about the distribution of medications.
Sure.
So that was a, you know, very timely but historically anchored book. And then a book titled The Roots of African American Identity, which was highly theoretical, is highly theoretical, and probably very specialized. It's been highly recommended, reviewed among a small group of intellectuals.
Okay. All right. Okay. But Promised Land really had a really interesting foundation to it and everything, and what you discovered out of Promised Land.
Yeah. And the interesting thing about Promised Land, it was published in 1984, I believe, and it's still in print.
That's pretty amazing.
That's a pretty long time for a book with footnotes to be in print.
Wow. Okay. So here she is. So now, how did you get to write the blog? So you were thinking book, and here you are. You're fast forward. How long ago was this? No? Year and a half?
April of last year. April of 2013.
Okay, so not very long.
No. And my my younger son, Charlie, who's a writer and an actor, and performing artist, was encamped in between gigs. I mean, he was...
It's on the way, Mom. That's right. Okay.
He sometimes spends several months with me in between gigs.
Okay.
Which is good. I mean, I love having him, and he does all my little repair things and takes care of his mother and so forth. And so it's nice to have him pass through and pause.
Right.
But he was working on a script while he was here, and I had just retired and was talking about how I was going to write about golf and hadn't written about golf and hadn't written about anything, really, and didn't know how to get started. And Charlie didn't want to talk to me because he had a writing project going.
He wanted to be in his own little space.
He was in his own little space.
And you were bothering him.
I was bothering him. He was working on the deck when this started. And before it was over, he had moved out to the shed. And so, I mean, he physically...
Moved to the shed to get away from his mother.
That's what he did.
Right.
But in between, before he moved, he said, he looked up at me and he said, well, why don't you write a blog to get started? And I said, well, that's a good idea, Charlie. How do I do that? And he still didn't want to deal with me. So he said, well, why don't you go in and Google how to write a blog? And I said, okay. So I went in and Googled how to write a blog. And Google was helpful and gave me a step-by-step set of procedures. And, you know, I follow directions fairly well. And so I did follow directions and got a template, set it up. It didn't take long. It's not hard. Anybody can do this.
Okay.
If they have a computer and can Google how to write a blog.
Okay.
And got it all set up and went back out and said to the deck and said, Charlie, it's all set up. Now I need to write a post, but I don't know what to write. And he still didn't want to talk to me. And he said, well, why don't you write about why you want to write about golf? And I said, well, that's a good idea. So I went back in and sat down and just hammered out this little 300 or 400 word, why I want to write about golf. Why is this blog about golf? And it's the first post on the blog, and it's titled, Why Golf? And it says, I want to write about golf because golf is a metaphor for life.
Wow.
And then it says, how? Mm-hmm. And it came out very quickly.
And I pushed the button to post it?
I pushed the button to post it.
Oh, my God. How was that?
It was
freeing?
It was
exhilarating?
It was a non-event, Ann.
It was a non-event. Oh, my God. I would have thought it would have been, oh, my God, I put this on the World Wide Web.
No, it was not. No bells went off. It didn't flash. Nothing happened. I just pushed publish.
Yes.
And it said published. And I thought,
is that all there is to this?
Is this like sending a manuscript off in the mail and it's gone now? And then I was kind of looking at Google, looking at my blog, looking at my template, and over on the left-hand side of the screen, there were some little options, audience, entry points, you know, and something called stats. And I thought, stats? Well, I'm a sociologist. I know about statistics.
Right.
Let me click it and see what happens. And I clicked it, and 10 people were at that very moment reading my blog.
Now, how did that make you feel?
Then I went crazy. I went absolutely insane. I went running out to Charlie, and I said, Charlie, 10 people are reading my post. And he said, yes, and didn't look up.
So it was anticlimactic with Charlie there anyways.
But it was not anticlimactic with me.
Yes.
Because suddenly I had this understanding that my blog had the capacity to provide an instant connection with my audience. And I'd never had that. It was like being on the stage. I understood. You know, it was interesting because I've never understood why Charlie likes being an actor on the stage. What is it that Charlie Bethel gets out of live performance? Well, he feeds off the audience is what he does.
Sure.
And I had no...
You never had that experience.
I hadn't had the experience, and
we
I had no
to have
understanding.
In the classroom, though, Beth.
There's an element of adversary in the classroom.
An element of adversary in the classroom. Well, thank God she's retired, folks. Okay.
You know, there's always a, I want you to do something that you probably don't want to do, and stuff.
Yeah, right.
You got to negotiate that with students. But,
right.
And they're, you know, they're not there voluntarily, not really.
Right. They're there because they want to get somewhere.
But those readers on that blog, like those people in that theater, are there voluntarily. They're there because they want to be there.
Wow.
And that's very different.
Absolutely.
And so I was hooked. It was that first post. I was hooked on the instantaneous feedback, which you don't get with a book.
Correct.
I mean, that drags on. It's still dragging on. I still get fan mail for Promised Land.
Right. Okay.
And I began to write, and I began to talk to people in a different way that who are a part of my golfing world, and I began to listen to the stories they tell me, mm-hmm. and I began to learn how to convert those stories into blog posts. It's a very different way of writing. I started carrying my phone with me and snapping pictures of people sitting in golf carts, swinging golf clubs, talking to each other, and writing stories about those pictures. And then I was looking at my email one day, and I got an email from this person I didn't know. Charlie was still here when this happened. And it said, "Hey, Beth, do you want to find out if you have what it takes to be a sports writer?"
All right. And with that, folks, we're going to join South Carolina News in Progress. Don't you go away. I hope you're hanging on the end of your seat to see what happens next.
McDonald's presents Confessions of an Ex-Hipster.
I loved cappuccinos, so I put on an itchy turtleneck and grew a goatee. But before I knew it, I was into French films, indie rock, and not bathing. Luckily, I got help from McDonald's McCafe cappuccinos. Now I'm watching football, wearing khakis, even high-fiving again. Thank you, McDonald's.
New McCafe mochas, lattes, and cappuccinos from McDonald's. With fresh ground espresso and real steamed milk, it's all the coffee, hold the attitude. At participating McDonald's.
Visit your local McDonald's in Greenwood and Abbeville today.
Oh, that's right. We're right back here, Sharp Facets Gallery. Hey, I tell you what, don't miss this weekend. Today, tomorrow, and Saturday, everything at Sharp Facets Gallery is 50. That's right, I said 50% off. And we'll pay the sales tax. So if ever there's been anything here, and if you haven't been in a while, you need to come see all the cool pieces that we have right here at Sharp Facets. It's not just jewelry. It's art. It's glass. It's anything that you could find out there in the antique world, we have it right here at Sharp Facets Gallery. Make sure you come see our great new collection of Tobys, by the way. Gosh, those have become popular again.
It's amazing.
Yeah, it is.
I was looking at them before the show started.
Yeah, top of the morning to you. There you go. All right, but anyways, come by and see us. Everything is 50% off, and we'll pay the sales tax. But we're here with Dr. Beth Bethel, and I think when we left this story, you were telling me that you got an email from one of the people, I guess, that's been reading your blog, and they said, what now?
They said, "Hey, Beth Bethel, do you want to find out if you have what it takes to be a sports writer?"
That sounds like, do you want to see if you can find out whether you have what it takes to become a graphic artist? You know, those things on TV.
Exactly what it was.
Exactly.
And I printed the email.
Right.
And I took it out to Charlie. And it was at this point that Charlie moved his office from my deck to my shed.
Right.
I said, "Charlie, I just got an email from this dude who asked me if I don't know him, who asked me if I wanted to find out if I have what it takes to be a sports writer. Mm-hmm. What should I do?"
And he said, "Gee, Mom, I don't know."
No, he didn't. He said, "Write him back and say, let's talk about it, Mom." And then he moved.
He moved?
He moved. He moved to the shed.
Yeah.
And so I went back in and I sent an email. See, Charlie guided all this by making me go back to work.
Right.
Because he didn't want to talk to me.
Right. Just so, think of what it had been if he was bored and he didn't have anything to
do. We'd still be sitting on the deck talking
about it. Exactly.
So I responded to the email with, "Let's talk about it."
Mm-hmm.
And what I got back a few hours later was a link. The guy responded and he said, "Go to this link and fill out the application." Oh, God.
Okay.
"And say, I referred you. I'm the editor."
Okay.
Well, editor of what? It turned out that this was the editor of the Sports Illustrated online golf blog, Pro Golf Now. But I didn't know that at the time.
You didn't?
No, uh-uh.
Okay.
I just filled out the form, and where it said, "Do you have any writing experience?" I pretty much gave them my resume.
Right. I figured you would.
Well, I didn't. I mean, you know, I've got a 30-page CV.
Okay.
They ran out of space. They couldn't take it all.
Okay.
And then nothing happened. I mean, I submitted it. You know, there's this online.
Were you impressed?
No, I wasn't. I wasn't depressed. I was confused because I hit submit again.
Right.
And nothing happened. No bells went off. No, you know, it's
it's an anticlimactic moment.
It was another anticlimactic moment in the development of my new career.
Correct.
And then I got an email a couple of days later that said, well, welcome to Pro Golf Now. Here's your login information. And I went to Charlie, who was out in the shed
now,
and said, what do I do now? And he said, log in.
Talking about taking somebody step by step. There you go.
And so I did log in, and I had to follow the directions. You know, I found that in life, as in golf, you just follow the directions and you'll be okay.
Correct.
You do, step at a time, right. One shot at a time, go to the target. So I filled out a profile sheet, mm-hmm. You know, name. Profile in online stuff is very different than, they didn't want a CV from me. They wanted to know if I had a blog, basically. And then they wanted a picture, and so I snooped around on my Facebook page till I found a picture that would work. And that wasn't, the picture was a problem for a while until my granddaughter came to visit this year. And
took a nice picture.
And took a nice picture and spread that around. And, you know, that I was, then I had to write something mm-hmm. about pro golf, and I didn't know anything about pro golf.
Okay.
And so I called Wes, the golfer, and I said, my other son.
In California.
And I said, Wes, I'm now staff writer for Pro Golf Now. And he said, well, gosh, Mom, that's great. And I said, Wes, I don't know how to be a sports writer. And he said, well, you're going to have to develop a sports writer's voice. Mom, you're going to have to get critical. You're going to have to make fun of people. And I said, Wes, I don't think that's the way I write.
Okay.
And he said, well, then you're not going to succeed, and hung up the phone.
Well,
I did. It took me months to learn to write differently for Pro Golf Now than it did to write for my own blog. It's taken a long time because it's a very different kind of writing. But the dude that I didn't know mm-hmm. who recruited me turns out to be the best editor I've ever written for.
Okay.
I'm very, very, very fond of him. He walked me through all my early work. He's constantly available. He is encouraging. He's a retired engineer. His name is Les Bailey.
Okay.
I'll give him a plug.
Okay.
And he's a sports fan. I mean, he's a NASCAR fan. He's a golf fan. He plays golf. And he has always wanted to be a sports writer. And so Les, when he retired, became a sports writer. He learned how, and he wants other people to learn how.
Okay.
And he's taught me. So what I wrote originally for Pro Golf Now is probably, I wouldn't go back and read it. I mean, when you asked me for material, I didn't send you any early material from that. Because it really was very awkward and not very many people read it. It wasn't popular, and I wasn't very good, frankly. But I've become a good sports writer.
What does it take to be a good sports writer?
Well, I think you have to love your subject.
Okay.
And you have to be knowledgeable about your subject. I mean, what does it take to be a good writer about anything? Well, the old advice, the best advice for any writer is know what you're writing about. Know your subject.
Know your subject. Sure.
And so I had to become a fan, a knowledgeable fan, before I could be a good writer about
this. So did you start reading other professional sports writers' writings?
I began to read things like Online Golf Digest. I began to watch Morning Drive, mm-hmm. which is an interesting TV show, you know, 2 hours of golf every morning of the world.
Right.
Which is great. I mean, now I have coffee with Morning Drive. Golf Digest has a lot of diverse material in it. Yes, I did what I know how to do. You know, having a PhD is like having a learning license.
Sure.
There's nothing that you can't learn. If you've managed to crawl your way and fight your way through the requirements for a PhD, you've learned how to learn and do it quickly.
Well, you know, I don't think anymore in this world can people say, I'm done, I don't ever have to learn again. The world has changed and that everybody has to learn. And with the computer age that we live in, that's and the digital, that's just all where it's at.
I think the digital age has totally transformed information and the way we share it.
Sure. It has, absolutely. But all the experience that you had on research and whatnot should have served you very well.
It served me very, very well. And you know, it's second nature to me to plow through a bunch of material and filter out and snatch what I want and what I need, and then to be able to go back and retrieve yet more for something else. So I was writing my own blog, and I was learning to write as a sports writer. And I got this, and of course now, I have converging audiences because I have my blog audience, but there's also this Pro Golf Now audience that is already, it's kind of built in. And I began to cover women's golf, first the LPGA, and then later I added the Ladies European Tour, and I'm working on adding the Asian Tour. So as I become more knowledgeable, I'm able to provide a broader coverage of women's golf, which it just feels very natural to me.
Now, I just wonder, when you're writing, do you wear any particular type of hat or anything?
No.
No? I just wondered if you put your hat on backwards and, you know, be a sports writer.
No, I don't have that. I hadn't thought about it. It might make a difference. I could try it.
Yeah.
I actually do all of my blogging and all of my sports writing on my laptop in my recliner, I swear. You know, I have a big desktop, and that's what I've always used for
all your research.
And my official, I'm writing now, I'm working now. But this doesn't feel like work to me. And so I'll just, sometimes I go out on the deck now that Charlie's left.
Right, okay. You've gotten your deck back. Have you ever been in the shed, Beth?
You know, I cleaned up his desk area. He made himself a little desk area. And I cleaned up his desk area because I thought, well, I wonder if there's anything magical out here.
Right.
But I've never used it. Right now I'm using it as a workspace for home repair projects.
Okay. Mm. All right, well, I can just see you sitting there with your hat on backwards, you know, the Walter Matthau type, you know. Ah, I think I'm right about this. Bang, 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 bang it out there. Hey, I'm here with Dr. Beth Bethel. Let's hear a quick word from our sponsors, and we'll be right back.
Layaway. We've done it for over 30 years here at Sharp Facets Gallery. So whether it's Christmas, a birthday, an anniversary, or just because, we know layaway every day. Come see us today at Sharp Facets Gallery. Need more info? Call us 229-6613. That's 229-6613.
Oh, that's right. We're right back here. Gosh. It is 4:51 in the afternoon. I hope you've been enjoying this conversation that I'm having with Dr. Beth Bethel this afternoon. We're talking about golf. We're talking about writing pro golf, becoming a sports writer. I tell you what, Beth, who would have thunk?
Who would have thunk this would have happened?
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. How's your golf game? Is it getting better?
No, it isn't. You know, my golf game sucks.
Well, at least she's perfectly honest, too, folks. So there you go. Where do you like to play?
I play at Star Fort. That's my home course. Yeah. But I like to play wherever I play.
Yeah. Well, that's great. That's great. Well, let's see. So tell me how you were able to go to Pinehurst.
Oh, Pinehurst was such an experience.
Do you think the Symetra Tour set you up a little bit to be able to go to Pinehurst?
That was already in place. That Pinehurst was already in place when I was volunteering in Symetra Tour.
But did you feel more comfortable being out there and
you
covering
mean after
that?
After you interviewed me and made me talk
after
join the media?
Yeah, right. Okay. No, but I mean, you know, I think it would have been a good experience just to get the whole feel of something of a tournament.
Yes. Well, yes. When during this Pro Golf Now period, I got sucked in.
Sucked in
to another deal.
Okay.
You know, this has been an adventure in opportunities. And Les Bailey, my editor, said, you know, I do this hangout with this kid over in St. Andrews in Scotland. We do it every Tuesday. And we need somebody to talk about women's golf, so you should do that hangout with us.
Okay.
And I said, oh, okay, how do I do it? Never done a hangout, had no idea. No, I just, it was like walking into a foreign country where I didn't speak the language. And, you know, and I bumbled around with that and eventually got a headset. I now look like an online blogger and learned to do hangouts. And the editor of St. Andrews Golf Magazine is this kid that Les is referring to. I mean, Les and I are old geezers.
Okay.
And Matt Hooper, the editor of the magazine, is in his 20s. And so there's a...
Wow.
He's a kid.
He is a kid.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And he asked me to write for St. Andrews and after we'd done a few hangouts. And I asked him what he was paying. And he told me he couldn't afford to pay me. And I said, I couldn't afford to write for free. And we left it at that. Then along comes the Open. And I really wanted to go to the Open. I wanted to go.
Pinehurst, right?
Pinehurst,
North Carolina. Yep.
It was a historic Open. I wanted to go. And so I said, Matt, I've got a way for you to get something out of me without paying me. Yeah. Oh, he said, how? And I said, get me media credentials for the U.S. Open and I will write for you. So I traded a few articles mm-hmm. on the Open, a daily post on the Open, plus a very long historical preview of the Open for the media credentials. So Matt got me to the Open and I returned the favor. You know, he met some of my expenses and I returned the favor and gave him some of the best writing I've ever done.
How about
just,
that?
It was just...
How was it to be in Pinehurst? I've been to Pinehurst before. It's a fabulous place, the history and everything. It is a pretty awesome place.
It took my breath away. It took my breath away. And knowing what I knew about the history of the Women's Open, mm-hmm. it was even more meaningful to know that this was the 68th or 69th playing of the Open. And the first one had 11 entries and was financed by the slot machine money at the Spokane, Washington Men's Athletic Club. Now, how...
Oh, come on.
This is
real?
A true story. And how did those 11 women that included Babe Zaharias...
Okay.
...who, by the way, said the way to play golf at this Open and win is just loosen up your girdle and give that ball a good smack.
I like it. I like it.
No, because I did a lot of background work to get ready for this mm-hmm. and to write the preview that I wrote for St. Andrews Golf Magazine. I mean, now we're not talking about a blog that I whip out Wednesday afternoon mm-hmm. before I take my nap. We're talking about something a little more serious. And,
sure.
And I'm feeling a little bit more obligation. And so
exactly.
I did what Dr. Bethel knows how to do. I did the background work on it. And by the time I got to Pinehurst, I knew the history of the U.S. Open, the history of the first Women's Professional Golfing Association that initiated that Open. I knew that the Open had transitioned to the LPGA during its very early period and that the LPGA couldn't handle the administrative complexities of the Open at that time. And so they gave it to the USGA, and the USGA has taken it to the level where it currently exists. And now the LPGA is co-sponsoring because it's much more administratively mature than it was when it was originally organized. You know, so I knew all of this, and I knew the players, and I knew the 11 women who originally made all this happen.
What year was that it actually started?
I knew you were going to ask me that. It was 46.
46, okay. 1946, okay.
I mean, and what was the world like in 1946? And while I'm talking about this, you know, do you know when Betty Friedan wrote The Feminine Mystique and launched, like a skyrocket, the modern feminist movement?
No, when was that?
63. So what's going on between 46 and 63 is women golfers are plowing this field and creating a space for women athletes. And the odd part of this is that there, I've read some interviews of pro women golfers in the 50s and the early 60s that have asked them to comment on the feminist movement, which is really, you know, it's already been done.
Right.
That it's been going on for 15, 20 years at this point, this business of women in public and women athletics.
What do they wear?
Well, that's where why do you think about it? Babe Zaharias says, loosen your girdle.
Right. That's what I'm thinking. Yeah.
They're
what
playing golf. And there were no sports bras.
They were uptight then, huh?
There were no sports bras. There, you know.
Well, you think about all the things, yeah, that have changed.
Yeah.
And where women's sport has come today.
And it's all led by golf. That's the crazy part about it. The and I think people don't really realize this. The LPGA, during its early period, there were three key people, and one of those key people was an academic, a gym teacher.
A gym teacher, yeah.
I mean, what we would call it.
Yeah, she right, today, yeah.
At the university level. She was a, oh my goodness, the words have left me. I'm too old. Athletics. And she played golf, and she said, you know, if we want to build a future, we've got to institute collegiate level golf. It was the first sport at the collegiate level that was incorporating women.
Wow. You know, you're listening to WCRS right here in Greenwood. We're going to talk a few minutes more here so Beth can finish at least intrigue you into checking out her blog. So here you had all the history. You were writing about this, and then you're actually at the Open in 2014.
And it was just mind-blowing, and I didn't want to write the usual. I wanted because I felt very moved by the experience, and so I decided that I wanted to write something that would allow my readers to experience the Open through my eyes and through my heart. Mm-hmm. And that's what I did. There's a whole series, and I think a series of six articles on my blog. Now, why are they on my blog when I was writing for St. Andrews? Because in the digital age, it was easier for me to post from from Pinehurst. Mm-hmm. I have my little laptop. Easier for me to post onto my blog, and for Matt, who was in Scotland,
lift
it from my blog and post it on St. Andrews stuff. And it was, the transfer was seamless. I would post at 11:15 at night, and at 11:30 at night, my time, mm-hmm. it'd be on the St. Andrews site as well.
Did that give you chills?
Yes, it absolutely does.
I'm telling
absolutely
you.
Does.
Absolutely.
And so if you want to read not just about golf, mm-hmm. but about the history of women's sports, about the liberation movement as it's experienced on the golf course by the women who were doing it, all those articles are on my blog.
And your blog is?
Golfing with Beth.
Golfing with Beth.
Well, here's the URL. The blog. Okay. The name of the thing is Staying in the Short Grass. And if right. you just Google Elizabeth Bethel's blog,
yes,
you'll get there. Staying in the Short Grass, you'll get there. Or the URL, www.golfingwithbeth, all one word, .blogspot.com. And you can just look at all that stuff.
You know, I think it's really, it really is amazing that you've been able to make that transfer and to jump the jumps that you have made. What do you think is next for Dr. Beth Bethel?
Oh, who knows?
Who knows?
Who knows? Would we have predicted this? Either of us?
No, probably not.
Nope.
But now, what about this Reflections on the International Crown? Real quick, what's that about?
Real quick, the International Crown was a big LPGA tournament, a new, brand new tournament, very different in format. It's kind of a dress rehearsal for the Olympics, a dress rehearsal for next year's Soha, a match play, international match play contest. And it was last weekend, and very big deal. And I covered it, of course, and wrote about it. But Sunday afternoon, I was just exhausted from the tournament. And so I tweeted, I'll write my last post after I've had time to process things. Because it was also very emotionally draining. And so Monday morning, I sat down and I wrote reflections on the International Crown. And I didn't have quite enough words. A blog technically has to have 300 words. It can be a million words, but the minimum is 300 words. And I didn't, when I had finished the initial part, I didn't have 300 words. And I thought, I got to have 300 words. Now what am I going to do? And so I, well, this is what bloggers do. They make a new section. Mm-hmm. And so I, takeaways. What are we going to take away from this tournament? It was brand new. It was very big.
Where was it at?
It was in Caves Valley Golf Club in Maryland, okay, outside Baltimore. And it was the takeaways that made me realize that my writing is changing, and the sociologist in me is meeting the sports writer in me for the first time.
That's
cool. Kind of interesting.
I got the opportunity to talk to some of the gals out there at the Symetra Tour, the senior ones that were there.
Yeah.
And they are just a really down-to-earth and realizing what it takes in today's world. And I really thought the tournament that he had where the seniors played with the young gals in the Symetra Tour was excellent.
Yes.
Gave them the opportunity to get some good advice.
Yes.
And I talked to both. I talked to the senior, then I would talk to the young person. It was great getting their takeaway of what they had heard from the senior that had been around the block a few times.
And so the takeaway piece is always fun to write, fun to talk, fun to interview, and fun to write.
Absolutely.
What do we learn from this?
Absolutely. Well, it's a shame your golf game isn't improving here, Beth.
Well, my writing's gotten better, though, and you know that.
There's trade-offs in life.
Yeah, there are trade-offs in life, always.
Absolutely. Well, it has been an absolute delight to have you here today. Thanks so much for taking time. Make sure you check out Dr. Beth Bethel. As she said, you can look under Beth Bethel. You can look under Staying in the Short Grass or golfingwithbeth.blogspot.com. And it says you can also follow her on Twitter at Beth Bethel.
That's it.
You're out there tweeting, huh?
Oh, I tweet.
You tweet.
Every time I publish, I tweet.
Okay. Well, there you go. Hey, Beth, thanks so much for coming by today.
Thanks for having me.
This is WCRS right here in Greenwood. Bye-bye, everybody.